financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good. We have another guest this week.
We have a great guest this week, and I'm really grateful to him for coming on with all that's going on politically right now. I did give him an out. You know, if you're too busy, you don't want to do this. I understand. But to his credit, given his work ethic and the kind of guy that he is, he said, oh, no, I'll do it. But anyway, I'd like to welcome Senator Michael D. Brown from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Financial Fitness.
Yeah, thanks so much. Happy to be here with you ladies. And, I'm a politician, so I always like to talk.
Well, we're going to let you do plenty of it. But I have to start by saying, give us a little history lesson. Why are you a shadow senator? Why don't we have federal representation in Congress?
Because when the country was formed, you have to remember democracy was an experiment. You know, they really didn't know how this was going to go. So there was a meeting of Congress in Philadelphia at Carpenter's Hall, which is where they met. They met periodically in different cities, Baltimore, Annapolis, Philadelphia. And a bunch of veterans from the Revolutionary War surrounded Congress with torches and threatened them because they hadn't been paid. So Congress escaped to New Jersey. And I grew up in New Jersey. I can tell you that's very scary. They snuck to New Jersey. And when they came to Washington, decided to make the capital Washington, Madison said, we must have control over the jurisdiction which we occupy. Because they were afraid if they didn't, that the local government could take control of Congress. So this is an anachronism, basically, that goes back over 200 years. Now, the issue today is what it always is in bringing new people into Congress, and that's control of Congress. Republicans don't want two more Democratic senators in the United States Senate. So they've stood firmly against every bill that we put in to become a state, which would make us equal. All states enter the union on equal footing. And right now, we've passed a bill in the House of Representatives twice for statehood, only with Democratic sponsors. No Republican has ever voted for it. And it's now in the Senate, but we need 60 votes in the Senate, and we don't have 60 Democrats in the Senate. So there's only one or two things we can do. We can either get 60 votes in the Senate, or we can suspend the filibuster, which is what makes us have 60 votes. But the Republicans, again, are feeling the heat, so they just introduced legislation that would permanently end my office. It would permanently eliminate my office, and it's likely that it's going to pass.
Well, boy, you've been doing this since 2007, I think, for 17 years.
I'll be at the end of my third six-year term in January. I mean, some of us saw this stuff coming. So,
but let me just say, because, you know, we do talk about money a lot on the show. And one of the things about finance is that it's inextricably linked to our lives. And I say this all the time. When Jess and I talk about guests, we could literally have anybody as a guest because we all have to deal with money. So part of your complaint here, part of why your fight for the citizens of DC is that you don't have any representation. So things like financial matters, budgets, things like that, you don't have the same control. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. And you know what? The president signs two budgets. He signs our budget and the federal budget.
Really?
Only jurisdiction which requires Senate, Congress, and the president to sign off on our budget. And they can do whatever they want with that. And actually, they use the budget against us constantly. And that's why what we call riders, which they put on the appropriations bill, will pass. Because the appropriations bill for the District of Columbia is $22 billion. And so the only way we could get these riders off would be to interrupt the $22 billion that's coming to the District of Columbia. And nobody's really willing to do that.
That's why people put riders on there, right? To be able to get some of these things passed that wouldn't otherwise normally pass?
Yeah, very often that's why they put them on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're supposed to be put on because you look at the legislation and you think the legislation's solid, but you have an amendment you want to make. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the amendments come off. Sometimes the riders come off, but I don't think it's going to happen in this case.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You work with the mayor and council, right? But walk us through a typical day, because you don't have the same life as a traditional senator. Can you explain what's different for people who are listening?
Well, you know, my job is basically to be a complainer about this, to go lobby Congress, to try to make people aware of the situation. Because we did a survey in the 1990s that said 80% of America believes we have exactly the same rights that every other American has. Because why wouldn't you, right? It's counterproductive to think that the citadel of democracy, you know, the place where we have our government, has no voice. I often say it's like telling people in Detroit they can't drive cars, or people in Hollywood they can't go to the movies. You know, we're the people that make national policy, but, you know, we have no voice. So this is why I have a podcast, and this is why I started it, because we wanted to get the word out. We wanted to inform America. So I have a website called Teach Democracy, and I have this, and I go out and lecture, and I've been to 17 states.
Is your website teachdemocracy.com.org? How do people find
it? Yeah, my show is called Shadow Politics, teachdemocracy.org.
Okay. And I just want to ask you this as well. You've shared with me that you haven't pulled a paycheck for this job. You've had a podcast for 11 years and you haven't gotten a paycheck for being a senator for this whole term.
But you know what? I learned a long time ago, it's really not about how much money you have. It's about how you live.
That's right.
I got to a point where I could put all three of my children through college, where my wife took 10 years off to raise our kids, and then got a master's degree and went back in the workforce. And all this was going on when I took this job. And so I'm not sure that I had the idea that I would never get a paycheck again, but I really didn't care. I don't have a beach house or a boat, but, you know, I live in $1 million house, which I own. You know, like I said, my kids all went through college. We've had a good life. And of course, my wife added to that. She has a good job.
No one will believe that, but we say that all the time. It sounds like a cliche. It isn't what you make, it's what you keep. But really, if you live below your means for long enough, that situation of being paycheck to paycheck reverses itself. And you did have a business where you made a lot of money, president and the founder of Horizon Communications. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I set myself up because, you know, the mantra over my desk, I had this thing that said, in the long run, we are all dead. And that's the mantra of small business, right? We always want to make it to the next week. We always want to make it to the next month. We're not planning what we're going to do in 5 years. So I tried to set myself up to make that comfortable. So when I bought my house, for example, we had money. My wife had a place and I had a place in Solenbilt. We put 50% down on my house. Actually, the house was just appraised at $1.5 million. And until last year, when I took a little money out, for 25 years, my mortgage payment was $750 a month. And, you know, and that's how I did it. I made sure that my expenditures never exceeded the money that I had available to work.
So the other thing I'm curious about, because I always hear stories on like Bill Gates or very rich people that they don't drive fancy cars. They'll drive like a Civic or, you know, just a regular car. What kind of car do you have? I want to know.
I'm an old boy from New Jersey, so I drive a muscle car. I have a Dodge Charger. Dodge Charger and a Harley Davidson.
Nice.
All right.
I have the Harley because I was so broke when I was a kid.
That's where I was headed.
And I was an orphan, so I didn't have anybody to sign on to my car insurance. So at 16, they laughed at me and they said, oh, yes, an unattached 16-year-old boy. Yeah, your car insurance will be more than three times what a car payment would be.
Right.
Yeah. So I was lamenting that. And some kid walked up to me in school and said, oh, there's a place downtown called Persons 8th and O, and they'll insure any motorcycle for $95 a year. So I got a motorcycle and I just fell in love with them. Unfortunately, in those days, it was horrible because winters could be very, very cruel and I had no other forms of transportation. Now it's just a matter of having fun occasionally. Mm. But yeah, you know, I think it helps. I'm sorry to say this, but I think it helps to be broke when you grow up because then you realize how little you really need to get by. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of us worry about things that we don't need to worry about. And car is the perfect example, Mercedes, a top of the line Mercedes-Benz, doesn't get you there any quicker than a Prius does. And, you know, I mean, it's really not, maybe if you've got the money to do it, it's nice and you want to do it, but it's not what you really need. You know, there's a great line in a Sheryl Crow song, which is, it's not having what you want, it's wanting what you have.
That's right.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I know that line too. You've touched on a perfect point, and we'll go to break in a minute, but I want to come back and ask you about being a dad and talk a little bit about what's going on politically and get some fatherly lessons from you. But I did want to say, often we see people, that's their first goal, is they can't wait to get a car and they buy the most expensive car they can afford. The insurance is high and then they get trapped in the payments. They start racking up credit card debt. Then they say, I want to buy a house. They can't get a house. And they're complaining that they can't live. They don't make enough money to live. You know, some of that blame is laid at the lender's doorstep. Why are we lending to people at these high debt to income ratios? But you give good advice there. And we certainly want to hear more of it when we come back. But I'm going to hold your feet to the fire a little bit about political things, if you don't mind, when we come back, because I want to hear your opinions.
Okay.
All right. Let me get your phone number, Dr. Francis.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with much more. Part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a Hug coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. Hug Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram.
We're talking about politics and inflation is on the tip of everybody's tongue. Can you talk a little bit about how inflation works? Like, is the current president to blame? Is the last president to blame? What kind of lag time is there? What do you see going forward? Just give us your thoughts on inflation, please.
Well, I think right now it's hard to answer that question because of the pandemic. You know, the pandemic interfered with our economy. There were great interferences in blockchain and getting things done and prices. You know, it's funny that prices always seem to go up and it's much harder to bring them down, right? You're talking to a guy that started out as a teenager supporting himself and used to pump gas for 28 cents a gallon. So, you know, I sometimes find myself driving ridiculous distances to save 2 cents a gallon on gas. And then I realized I've just spent $1.50 saving 60 cents. But for most people, first of all, inflation is the cost of gas and the cost of bread.
Yeah.
So right now, when the president, for example, is out there talking about the economic developments that have been made, there have been several boosts to the economy over the last 6 months, right? Inflation is coming down slowly but surely. Unemployment is down. People are basically doing better. People don't see that. You know, we don't have, the average American doesn't have money in a 401k. They're not looking at the stock market. They really don't care. The stock market, I started investing in the stock market 40 years ago, and the Dow Jones was, I think, a few thousand, and now it's up to almost 40,000. I mean, it's really, really, really grown, but that's not the economy to most people. Inflation is all they care about. The cost of housing, the cost of bread, the cost of gas. And I think it's very difficult to bring those things down because, you know, we know in a capitalist society, it's all about supply and demand. And that's why we have big problems with monopolies, right? Because they can control the supply. Mm-hmm. And competition is what makes the economy work. So my biggest worry about the economy, I can tell you, is that there are people like Amazon and Walmart that are taking over. You know, I think that that's problematic in the long run.
As we're doing this show during Prime Days.
Yeah, during prime days. My wife's up there making a list right now of which, you know, the things you're going to buy, you know, and we're consumer-oriented society, too, here in the United States. So, you know, we don't necessarily reduce consumption in line with, I'm not sure how the Laffer curve works, but we don't, it seems to me that supply and demand has been interfered with in the past generation or so. We're all about buying on credit. Not that you shouldn't, you know, it certainly has its place. But I think we get overextended. I think when things start going bad, they can go bad very quickly for people, you know, and I think that's the problem. Now, who's to blame for that? I don't think the president's to blame, because it's really up to Congress to make policy and economic policy as well. So, you'll have Republicans standing up there right now talking about how they're, you know, what Biden's doing is hurting the economy. But it's really the Republicans in Congress who have stood in the way of a lot of things, just to be honest about it. And they play both ends against the middle. And so, yeah, whatever president, you know, that's traditionally the case, too, is that who's ever in the White House, the other party loses in an off-year election because they took a lot of blame for stuff.
It's true. And there's, I think people don't recognize that lag time. They see a 9% inflation and they blame Biden immediately. They see a 3% right. inflation and they almost ignore it because the prices are still high. But, I'm not defending President Biden any more than, you know, against President Trump here, but people have to realize this, you know, you get handed, you only have 4 years to do this. You get handed whatever the last president left behind, and you either benefit from that or you dig your way out of it. And in this case where we had COVID, we gave away a lot of free money to people to try to keep this country afloat. And now people have just completely forgotten that conveniently, you know, like, oh, well, so that money was given away. I mean, we'll just print more. But when we talk about inflation, it's really a hot topic. And I don't like that politicians use it against each other as a weapon, because you're absolutely right. Congress is in charge of this. You know, it's not whoever's in the White House, whichever candidate it might be.
President's priority, what his job is to set the agenda. You know, that's his priority. That's what he can do. And Congress can either take it or not take it. I mean, they don't have to follow his lead, especially if he doesn't lead Congress. And, you know, as liberal Democrats, we're paralyzed right now at the idea that former President Trump may win. They already have the Supreme Court. They might take Congress, both House and Senate. And that would, you know, again, like competition works in the economy, the balance of power really has to be intact for the government to work properly. It can't work properly if one party controls everything.
You may not be able to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I've never seen the country so divided. In my lifetime, I've never experienced an election either with two incumbent presidents or where I felt fearful of some sort of retaliation. And I was in a parking lot the other day and a truck went by and it had an F. Biden flag in the back. And my initial reaction was, I'd like to go and talk to that person and say, right. I bet your mother's really proud of you. You know, this is not how we do it in America. We say, I don't agree with that. I'm going to vote. Right. But I immediately had the almost a visceral response. You can't go and do that because this person could be dangerous. Their job is to provoke me. Their job right now, that guy's job, was to be provocative. And there are things on the other side as well. And I just really dislike what's going on about the two sides scrapping with one another when it seems like there's almost no concern about the truth. You know, if this pitch doesn't work, I just pivot and I say this now. So I'm going to ask you for your, this is the question finally. I'm going to ask you for your immediate response when you saw former President Trump get shot in the ear and go down and come up again. What was it, and pump his fist and say fight?
At first, I was horrified. I think next, I realized, because I'm a politician, that President Trump couldn't have handled the situation better as a politician by standing up and being defiant and acting strong. I was like, You know, he did, this photo of him with blood on his face and his fist in the air, that's going to last forever. And it's going to go on and on. It's going to be one of those images that's burned into our brain. And then, you know, ultimately, when I started to really consider it, I thought, oh my God, how amazingly, what an amazing twist of fate it was that he turned his head at the last minute and that bullet grazed him. He probably came closer to being killed, close as you could possibly come to being killed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that I would accredit it to divine intervention, but one way or the other, I thought it was a really scary thing. And we're around this stuff all the time. I knew the police officer that was killed with Ronald Reagan when Ronald Reagan was attacked, because his job was to be at the Hilton and scan the, and for politicians. And when I worked for Jimmy Carter, he did the same thing for Jimmy Carter that he did for Ronald Reagan. So we knew some of these people. James Brady was somebody that we were familiar with in Washington, and he was critically injured in that attack. And certainly one of my earliest childhood memories, I remember putting a scrapbook together when I was a kid about the assassination of President Kennedy. All the stuff that was in the paper. And I remember women openly weeping in the grocery store. I think I was in third grade at the time. People were just horrified by that. And that's the thing that really bothers me. What you're saying is that was something that was a rare exception. And now it seems to be more the rule than an exception. If you think of all the people that have been attacked, Gabby Gifford, Steve Scalise, it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, right? Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford was attacked. The list goes on. And yeah, it's really scary that that's become part of our narrative. But, again, I got to also say, for years, we've been trying to ban assault rifles and other things. And because the NRA is really a trade association that wants to sell more guns, they've been able to stand in our way by contributing massive amounts to Republican campaigns and telling Democrats who don't support them that they will campaign against them. I have a friend, a guy I work with, Mark Warner, who's a senator from Virginia. And for years, we couldn't get him to sign onto our bill because the NRA threatened if he did, because they don't want senators Democratic senators in that. They threatened him if he did that they would campaign against him and they would give money to his opponent. And, finally he came around. But this is a fear, that you want to reform American politics, get the money out of it. If you could get the money out of politics, you would go a long way. Two things. Correct. That and give them a 4-year term instead of a 2-year term, because the day after they get elected, they start raising money for the next election. Yeah. So they're always out there pandering, and it's just not a good situation to put them in.
Yeah, it really is ripe for graft and power.
Yeah, it really is. Jersey and Senator Menendez was somebody that I personally got to sign on to a bill. And look at him. And we see a lot of that in politics too, don't we?
For sure. Yeah. Okay. So we're running a little bit short of time, but I want to ask you, because you're the father of 3 adult children. Yeah. So we recently did a Father's Day show about fatherly lessons, and we're talking to a politician who's spent, 17 years working at something mostly without pay. What would you give for advice, or what would you hope for your kids and the next generation about American politics?
Well, first, let me say that as I retire in January, I'm going to become a relentless lobbyist for grandchildren. None of my kids are cooperating in this regard. But I would say, give your kids good values and teach them good lessons, because, that's what you've got. You worry about. My oldest daughter's 31 years old. You worry about them their whole lives. It doesn't change at all. But what you have to do is you have to make them as solid as you can, and then send them out in the world and hope the best for them. And I think setting standards, you know, my wife, all my kids have college educations, all three of them. My wife was a valedictorian of her high school, and she and I both have graduate degrees. And, you know, we never looked at education like it was an option. We all, you know, we pounded into our children. My oldest son, you know, went through those times in college where he wasn't sure that he wanted to go back, and, you know, and we stayed on him, and he got his bachelor's degree in 4 years. And, you know, I think that's what you have to do. And then you have to have faith in what you've done, you know?
Yeah. Well, congratulations on getting three kids into good adulthood. That's a feat in itself.
So far, so good. I got my fingers crossed, you know.
Yeah, and I hope things work out for you in D.C. It doesn't seem fair that they don't have federal power there, so federal vote. So I would like to ask you because we could talk forever about this stuff, if you might be interested in coming back another time.
Oh, always. I mean, I think it's delightful, and I think your show is important. Because we really don't know much about money. You know, I was an economics major as an undergraduate, and the only reason I went to graduate school and studied political science was my minor, was I never saw myself doing anything an economist does. I said, nah, that's not me. I can't sit in an office with glasses on, a pencil and a ruler and, you know, whatever they do. I didn't understand some of it too, really. Till this day, I think a balance sheet is a really ridiculous idea. How can you always have no money? How can you, all your expenditures always be exactly what your income is? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, we could go on forever about that too, but thank you so much. You're a lovely guest, and I'd love to have you back again. So, Senator Michael D. Brown from Washington, D.C., thank you.
My pleasure to be on the show, and I hope you'll be on my podcast sometime.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Talk some more.
And thank you.
You can give us an expert opinion on money rather than my you know, a thumbnail sketch.
All right. Before we go, let me get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333. And your website, Senator Brown?
Well, you can find me at pbsradio.com. You can find the show. We archive 6 years of shows, I think, so you can listen to the people I've interviewed over the years. Or you can go to teachdemocracy.com. And that's really set up for students. We're trying to teach kids lessons about how America was formed and how important it is to be involved.
Great.
Go vote. I don't care.
Please vote.
Vote.
Whoever you vote for, just please vote.
All right. Thank you both very much. We will be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
We don't know where we'd be without her and Hug Your Money. The recommendations, the strategies, she is just this rock.
We got the news that Carrie had a tumor inside her spinal cord.
Our lives changed, right on a dime.
It's very stressful.
It's devastating. Financial spiral downhill. We're solid, but it can put a strain on the best of marriages.
Who do you look to regain that control? I'm Mike.
I'm Carrie. We chose to use this to strengthen our marriage, and it works. And I would recommend this. It has brought us closer together and only strengthened us.
Debt, budget, retirement. Hug works best when we work together. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good, and I always am happy when we have a guest joining us.
Absolutely right. This handsome gentleman to my left here, if you're seeing this on YouTube, is Dr. Bob Weil, the sports doctor. And we're just so happy to have him again, because the last time we tried to do this, we couldn't get the video to work. Mm-hmm. And so if you're listening to us on radio, you know, you can find this on YouTube once it's up, which will be very shortly. But it's great to see him in person. And I'm just going to kick it off to him. I mean, he's such a veteran. He has so much to say. So, Dr. Bob, will you tell us?
Oh, my God, the pressure.
About you.
The pressure of youth sports. Hey, right. I was going to say the sports doctor's meeting the money doctor. We're meeting in the middle. I'm a sports podiatrist, so I pay big attention to the role of the foot in sports, whether you're a 75-year-old grandma or you're the best athlete in the world or you're the parents of serious athletes. And Dr. Francis and I paid attention to the challenges of youth sports parents with club teams and traveling teams and how expensive it is, and that it is a big topic in youth sports. But I was mentioning to Francis this morning, one of my favorite sports writers, the famous Rick Tellender from Sports Illustrated. He was part of the sports writers in Chicago. He's written 10 books. And he's the lead sports reporter on the Chicago Sun-Times. He's been on my show for 20 years, give or take a few weeks. And his article today was Money in Sports. Yeah. And he was talking about the LIV Golf Tour and the hundreds of millions of dollars that were paid to players. But he was also talking about a month ago and 6 weeks ago, the paying of athletes in college sports and how this whole world is turned upside down with the effect of money and whether it's college sports and whether athletes could be paid or they cannot be paid. So the topic of money in sports is sometimes endless. Other times it could be tedious.
Really quick, too. There was just a ruling that now college athletes can be paid for their name and
likeness. Oh, yes.
Correct. Yes.
Well, yes. The likeness, this is a very big deal. Student athlete was a term invented by attorneys over the years so that schools necessarily wouldn't be responsible. Let's say your son or daughter had a concussion or a serious knee injury in college and they were covered for the expenses of the surgery, et cetera. Once they're out of school, they're not covered anymore. And the NCAA, which of course is one of the most famous, one of the most powerful organizations for all our lives, but really caught in the middle because they didn't want to ever have an athlete who could sign his hat, maybe give his jersey away, take part in a promotion. The school's making $200 million a year, and the athlete gets suspended if he or she gets $10 at a pizza store. Yeah. So this has turned the world upside down. At the same time with you two gals, how the world of women's sports, like women's basketball, has exploded. So I'll ask you guys, what would you like to talk about?
Oh, my gosh, we're talking about it already. I, for one, would like to know your opinion about how paying college athletes for their name, image, and likeness is affecting them now and how you think this will shake out, because it's like the Wild West out there.
Nobody knows. Good luck to us.
Yeah.
This is something I'm hoping that smarter minds will work our way through this so that it's sensible and that somehow it's equitable and that it's workable. I think the premise, most people agree with the premise. If you're playing for a major university, come out of high school, you're highly recruited, the local car dealerships and all of these other companies would love to have you involved and they never could. So now someone like yourself, the money doctor, where maybe the parents or the coaches trying to figure out how do we navigate through this? And the answer is we'll see, because it's brand new and it's got a lot of possibilities for hassles, to say the least. I mean, Deion Sanders, his son, I think, made $4 million, his quarterback son, with Colorado. And a lot of you say, great, you know, and Deion is saying, hey, listen, I'm all about the education, you know. And so I think we have to understand it's an upheaval. As you know, social media magnifies everything times 1,000.
Well, it's crazy. Yeah. We can't keep up with it, right?
Yes. And the big side of it, you know, on the sports doctor, I call it the mental game, where we talk about these kinds of pressures on these kids, on these parents. The more talented your son or daughter is, the more the pressure is. Don't you understand, Dr. Weil? Her ankles are killing her. She needs 4 Advil a day to show up.
Yeah.
And what do we do about those things? You know, so the pressures that many times are magnified with social media have thrown all of this into semi-chaos. Everybody knows, whether it's the pain medicines. And what's interesting to see, you know, the Olympics are coming up. It's always an exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have Simone Biles, maybe the most popular athlete in the world, one of them. And, you know, she made a big deal out of mental health.
Yes.
When she had her problem at the last Olympics. So the pressures and the challenges, which a lot of times, again, they fall in your lap, you know, which is, how do I afford my 3 different children's sports that they're playing? How do I prepare for this?
Yes.
Money Doctor Jess, what do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I just had a quick question actually for the Money Doctor, especially with either these college athletes or when you sign a professional contract. You hear all the time about these people signing these huge contracts and going broke. How do you approach that when someone's signing a contract, but it's all dependent on injuries and whether, you know, they're able to fulfill that contract or not? How do you approach that with budgeting your money when you don't know when it's going to end?
Yeah, that's a great question, but it's the same as any other kind of thing. You know, how do you approach it when somebody's just starting off a career as a doctor, but they don't know if they're going to be in the hospital, in that hospital for a long time, or they're going to have to move, or they might be unemployed? It's always
$300,000.
Yeah.
Right, student loans.
Right.
So it's always plan A and plan B. I mean, I sound like a broken record, but live below your means. Don't live within your means. And so, you know, at least until you've made your money and it's sitting somewhere where you
money
can say,
doctor
okay.
wisdom. Yes. Yeah, and I had a famous guest on a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And her point was 70% of professional athletes are broke. After 5 to 10, it was shocking with the millions of dollars. Yes. And that was like amazing that stat was reality. So that's why Jess's question makes, you know, so much sense regarding, you know, an athlete signs for millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
If they're lucky enough for that to happen. And then, you know, what kind of preparedness? I would think you guys are in the middle of all of those discussions.
Well, I think that it's important to remember also that they may be signing for that amount of money, and they may even, you know, be conservative in the way they live, but they're also trusting a lot of people on the outside to manage that money. And how many nightmare stories have we heard about the financial planner took off with the money, the manager absconded with it?
Or they have a friend, that manages them that they have experience.
Otani, the famous Otani of the Dodgers, the famous pitcher, home run hitter.
Yeah.
Whose agent, his good friend, I think stole $16 million from him over the years, his interpreter. Remember that?
No,
that's just like a month or two ago. Yes.
I remember as a child, I have a picture of Bobby Orr in my office that one of the DJs gave me and said he wanted me to have this because I told him this story. But I remember as a child watching the commercials come on for a bank with Bobby Orr. Mm-hmm. And at that time, celebrities weren't really doing that sort of thing. And I asked my father, I must have been, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old or something like that. And I asked my father, how come Bobby Orr's talking about a bank? And he said, because he's broke. Mm. And I cried. I was like a little girl and I just cried. I thought, Boston Bruins, Bobby Orr broke. What the heck has happened here? And that's the first time I remember a story about someone taking off with someone else's money. It wasn't the kind of world I was brought up in, you know, where you trusted people and your word meant something and a handshake was important. And I think as we get more and more money into the sports, there's more and more graft and corruption. And it's just the way it goes. But I would like to ask you, Dr. Bob, what you tell parents who are thinking or listening to a child who is, you know, really talented. Everybody's pushing them, saying, you're going to get a full boat at this college. What do you tell them? How do you tell them to prepare for that? How many of these kids really get that full boat? And what does it mean when they get out? Do they really go pro or not? What do you think?
Well, many times, you know, the challenge is one of my poster boys, the 2010 men's Olympic figure skating gold medalist. You know, one of my real specialties is the world of figure skating. Evan Lysacek won the gold medal in 2010. He grew up here in Naperville, Illinois. He was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates. So I'm still putting orthotics in 10-year-old skates. After the Olympics, I had his mom, Tanya, great lady, on the radio. And I said to her something that was bantied about exactly what you're asking also, which is, whose goal was it, you know, to develop an Olympic athlete? And she said, you know, Dr. Bob, we had ice time at 6:30 in the morning, and I never had to wake the kid up. He always was in the car with his gloves on because it was his goal. It was his dream. So, and a famous late great sports psychologist shared the radio with me in the 90s, Jim Vickery, had recommendations for the sports parents you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And he said, number one, don't be a critic. Be a listener. Talk to your son or daughter. Are you hurting? How's your relationship with your teammates? So I think sports parents need to be educated. And again, the financial side is one of them. If your son or daughter is on a club team, volleyball, soccer, tennis, ice time, you mentioned hockey, ice time is always very, very expensive.
Yes.
So I think if you have a talented child, then you want to be able to become aware of, again, how do I keep my son or daughter injury free? You know, is she losing, you know, is she flat footed? Does she have high arches? Is she knock-kneed? Does she have a history of trouble? You know, how is she feeling? And so we want parents to be educated. There's been tremendous attention, knock on wood, to the role of the young athlete themselves having a voice.
Yes.
One of my very good friends, famous therapist in the world of gymnastics, is heading to Paris for the Olympics to treat some of these kids. And she fought for years about having a voice as a young athlete.
Yes.
Think of what happened in gymnastics with the doctor and that whole nightmare, the abuse and all of these things. So we tell parents, be educated. Understand that you want to realize the reason I co-authored the book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, the new book is going to be including sports grandparents, was there's an epidemic, Francis, in youth sports overuse injuries, both physical and mental, because of these pressures. So we want parents to be educated, and we want them to include being good listeners. Instead of, you know, suck it up, and injuries always happen. And again, if you've had a son or daughter that, weren't you, were you a swimmer, Francis? I'm trying to remember. Were you an athlete?
I am a swimmer, but.
You are a swimmer. Okay.
I'm going to stop you on swimmer because I have a story about a local Olympic swimmer, amputee. And I wonder if you know him, but I'd like to talk to you about him when we come back. It's perfect timing about Olympics and swimming.
And I have some football questions, too. So that's all coming up. First, I want to get your phone number, Francis.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with much more. It's all coming up with Financial Fitness on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Rayum, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a Hug coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. Hug Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with Francis Rayum, the Money Doctor, who has brought along another doctor for the show today, a special treat.
Two doctors, no waiting. Dr. Bob Weil, the sports doctor.
Yes. Two great titles, the Money Doctor and Financial Fitness. Mm-hmm. I think I like that financial fitness also.
You like the fitness part of financial
absolutely,
fitness.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I like the sports doctor, too. So just before the break, we were talking about swimming. And Olympics. And you asked me if I was a swimmer. I am a swimmer, but not an Olympic swimmer. There is a local person named Michael Welsh, Mike Welsh, who's an Olympic swimmer. He was the first physically handicapped athlete to complete the 28.5-mile Manhattan Island Marathon. So this guy's been doing a lot of stuff. But here's the kicker. He's 63. He's been doing this for 25 years. He swims open water Olympically, and he's an amputee. Now, he's a very inspirational guy. I'll call him and see if we can get him to come on and talk to us about this, because he's really inspirational. He's a Marine, but he didn't lose his leg in duty. He lost his leg to driving drunk on a motorcycle just outside of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. And so now he speaks to people about the dangers of that. So he goes a lot to schools. We're talking about youth sports, and does that sort of thing. I'd love to hear your slant, just because we're talking about an injury and somebody who really continued to
he's a real champion.
At a high level.
Yes, this is somebody who is an exceptional champion in so many ways, whether you want to use the word perseverance, whether you want to use the word motivation. But the point many times when we're talking about, you know, what does it take to get to the Olympic level in any particular sport? And we want to try to talk about the two things everybody cares about in sports, period, which is how can I prevent problems and injuries? And then for those indicated, how can I enhance performance? You know, you want to be two steps quicker, strengthen your feet and ankles, work balance, whatever your sport happens to be. But many times overuse becomes a real concern. The team doctor, orthopedist of the Yankees, been a guest of mine a few times, Dr. Chris Ahmad, he was writing about the 50th anniversary of the famous Tommy John surgery, surgery that everybody knows. Do you know that about a third of those surgeries today are on teenagers?
Wow.
On adolescents?
Oh, that's
too much, too much. Yes, it is. But it's an example, again, of too much. And one of the reasons, again, swimming is an example of what I call prodigy sports. I have a chapter in my book called Prodigy Sports. Think gymnastics, figure skating, again, swimming, could be soccer, where that 10, 11, 12-year-old is so good that this is all they want to do. They want to specialize in the one sport. Now, every doctor and therapist knows we want these kids to play all different sports, use different parts of the body, experience different things. And that's great, unless you're a gymnast or a figure skater. You know what? Evan Lysacek was doing triple jumps as a 10-year-old. He didn't want to play soccer or do something else. So one of the examples, again, for sports parents, getting back to your question, is you really want to be paying. If your son or daughter is a serious athlete, you want to get physical therapist feedback. You want podiatry feedback. What's the best shoe for that young athlete? You know, so again, when you're talking swimming and you're talking about a sport where there's shoulder problems from swimming 10,000 miles a week, you know, because the thought more is better is still today a big, big problem.
Yeah. So, you know, we talk about your book quite a bit. Tell me why you wrote this book. What did you feel needed to be said that caused you to take the time and effort, which it takes a lot of, to write a book?
My co-author, Sharkey Zartman, is a Hall of Fame beach volleyballer, team national player, coach, and was very, very involved in the world of, like we said, what does it take to become a world-class athlete? Mm-hmm. What does it take to coach one? And what about my side of things, which was whatever the sport was, there was an epidemic, again, in capital letters, of overuse injuries. You know, going to three hockey games a weekend, or your son or daughter playing 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about, maybe you're living in the South and the baseball player is just overdoing it. Too much throwing, too much pitching.
The two-a-day practices for a lot of them.
Exactly. And the more is better philosophy, you know, whether it's an overzealous parent, you know, close your eyes and think of the ranting, raving parent on the sideline. We've all seen this.
Yeah. Or coaches,
seen this.
I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Or I call them Svengali coaches.
Oh, yeah, Svengali.
These overzealous coaches, and or sometimes doctors.
Yeah.
Again,
well,
you know, the pain pill epidemic. So the reason I wrote the book was the part of the book was number one. Sharkey wrote Sports Parenting 101. All these topics, what is it about choosing these things as a parent? The second part of the book was called The Sports Doctor's In. I talked about everything from what's the best shoe to foot injuries to concussions to these kinds of questions. The third part was, I said, ask the experts. I got about 8 different experts, nutrition, sports psychology, coaching, parenting, to add their 2 cents. The last section was sports parents. I got some feedback from, what's your two cents if you had a son or daughter who, you know, was a scholarship player and those mm-hmm. kinds of pressures? And the situation is today is no different. And when you throw the money in with the what it might be worth if your son or daughter becomes a college Division I player, then we would throw in even more pressure regarding yeah. against these kids. And somehow we have to remember that sports, youth sports, is also supposed to be fun, mom and dad.
Right. Quick question yeah. I want to slip in. That's when you were talking about concussions, as someone who has a little five-year-old who looks like he's about eight or nine, he's a big kid, thoughts on youth football? I do worry about concussions and then the damage to the brain later on.
There is, yes, there is, everybody write this down, there is no safe tackle football.
Mm.
Period.
Yeah, right.
The good news is flag football is even going to be an Olympic sport. So girls, we used to go nuts with the concussions. I've had people on from all over the world in identifying concussions, dealing, you know, 20 years ago, if you had a concussion, you came to the sidelines, they say, how many fingers?
Yes.
Okay, you're okay.
Yeah.
Today, there's a whole protocol. It's a tremendous challenge. There's a gal, Catherine Snedeker, who founded Pink Concussions. There is a difference on the female side.
Mm-hmm.
So as a mom, or dad, if you can, unless your son loves, and this is his dream and football, I would duck it.
Other quick question I want to throw in with the recent signing of Bronny James with the Lakers. He had
yes.
that medical condition. And
yes.
is it smart that he's going back to play again?
You know, I'll tell you a story about his daddy, LeBron, who's one of the greatest examples of character mm-hmm. in sports, even though he's a billionaire. He was in his a game. His son's 13, 12 years old, Bronny. LeBron's in the stands with his mother. And his mother finally says to LeBron, would you sit down already and stop ranting and raving and rooting for your son? And we've all been there. It's interesting to see, again, LeBron, his son's got tremendous pressure. There's a lot of people who feel, what do you care? You know, you signed as a pro. You average 5 points a game at USC. He had tremendous expertise cardiovascularly that have evaluated him. This was a real shock. Mm-hmm. It was like that football player on Monday Night Football who had cardiac arrest and they saved him.
Mm-hmm.
So these crazy things happen and we have to go along with the medical opinion and the cardiology. You know, LeBron got the best of the best. They say he's cleared to play. So I'm going along with that and wishing him the best. And, you know, they might be the first father and
they
son.
They are. Yeah, first father
in the history of the NBA. I wonder if LeBron had some influence in the Lakers picking Bronny. I'm a big fan of the whole thing. I think it's going to be a great story.
Well, I'm sure for the Lakers, too, marketing-wise, where we're talking about the money.
Huge. Yes.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah, even if it wasn't an overt pick my kid, maybe their nepotism was at hand there a little bit. I mean, it had to be on people's minds, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, think about the brand deals they're going to get, right?
Oh, it's going to be dramatic. It's going to be tremendous. And again, you know, LeBron, we've never seen anything like it, a 40-year-old, his physical athlete like this.
Well, Tom
who's
Brady.
Still at the top of the game.
Yes. I was just going to say yes. Brady. Yeah. So that's interesting because how much of that do you think is medical care that has kept them going? Or are they like genetically just in
all
great shape and state?
All of it. We have come a long way. The science of high performance and sports medicine has become dramatically enhanced. Now you have nutritionists. You have, again, 25 years ago, when an athlete would say, I have a psychologist, they'd say, what do you think? What's wrong with you?
I think
my famous sports psychology friend didn't use the word. 20 years ago, he was a performance enhancement consultant, and he worked with Olympians, and he worked with Northwestern and the White Sox. The word psychology scared athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's accepted, so you have teams of experts. Again, okay. Nutrition, mental training, rest and relaxation is the new big science.
Yeah.
So we've come a long way, but still injuries happen, and again, overuse. You know, this, we're not talking about you fell, you hurt yourself, you got injured.
Yeah,
we're talking about, I don't remember something. It just, my ankle started really, really hurting me. And that's when we talk about biomechanics.
Yep.
You know, are you flat footed? Are you loose? Do you have leg length equality, et cetera, et cetera? So the podiatrist, The physical therapist is an important, especially again, if you are a parent or an athlete yourself, even if you're a recreational walker or runner, if you have a history of problems, then you want to pay attention.
You know, it's funny. I will come clean and say that Dr. Bob helped me a bit as well. Overuse. I'm not an Olympic athlete, but
I was
going to
ask you if you found those orthotics in your closet.
I did. I absolutely did. And so I have a hamstring injury right now, you know, and of course my rotator cuff shoulder, but I am doing the things that we talked about. And my goodness, it's hard for me to back down. And I think for an athlete, it's almost impossible to just say, I have to rest. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to push through it.
Yes. But if you include that rest and recovery is enhancing.
Yeah.
You know, again, my figure skaters 25 years ago, they would do visualization. Mm-hmm. The rest of sports thought they were nuts.
That's right.
It's become, again, a very, very big deal. You know, one of the Chicago hitmen, the great Eric Soderholm, played for the White Sox. And he was the first pro ball player. I put orthotics in his shoes. He had a hypnotist with him. The team thought he was nuts. Now, again, hypnotist becomes a big part. But if you look at the time off for yourself, including time off and rest and recovery, you know, not season long, then you're just being smart sports medicine wise. And this is where the education continues.
Well, thank you. I want to say that I'm going to use a little hypnosis right now. Buy Dr. Bob's book. Buy Dr. Bob's book. But we just have about a minute left, and I'm just going to ask you if you have any parting thoughts for us. I'd love to have you back again if you'd like to come and continue this conversation. But parting words of wisdom for parents with youth in sports.
Be a good listener. You know, my son played serious sports. The time goes by. When it's over, it's over. Cherish these times you have, and don't make it more difficult by being a critic. Mm-hmm. Don't be analyzing your son or daughter's performance on the ride home. Enjoy their perspective and understand that social media has tripled the pressure on these kids, and pay attention to all those factors in your quote unquote sports therapy. That's my jewel for the week, Francis.
that's great advice. Great advice. And watch your money. Yeah.
Right.
Jess, any final thoughts for you?
I would just say to make sure that they know sports is not the only thing. Sometimes it gets, that becomes who you are and not what you do.
Well, maybe we'll tune in with you guys every month or two with the Sports Doctors in segment. Let me know.
That's very nice. Can you show your book again for us, Dr. Bob?
Hashtag Hey Sports Parents on Amazon.
Francis, can we get your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you both, the two doctors today on Financial Fitness. We'll be back next Saturday with another edition right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
I mean, I'm 68 now. I have been with the program probably about 13 years, maybe, and every time I've needed some financial advice, it's been there, and it's been solid advice. I'm actually retired now, and last year when I bought a Can-Am trike, brand new, pre-ordered, I went back to Hug Your Money, and I'm so glad I did. I have definitely a peace of mind. As far as the hamster in a wheel business has been set aside for me.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.